should have tweeted out our email so your fans could have wrote questions.
All right, here we go.
Because you actually have real fans.
For the winner by split decision.
It's time for your number one source for mixed martial arts. Mixed martial
arts. Oh, Jesus!
It is over! Wow!
Breaking down the week's news and results.
Roll call!
The authority for combat sports.
Want to take a chance and risk getting knocked out?
Oh my God! Wow! Wow!
It is all over!
This is the split decision.
Can he get it here, Mike Nichols? And good night, Irene! Oh my God, he's done it!
And we are back for another week.
Who knows?
Who knows?
What number is this?
I don't know. You know, counting's hard for me. There's a lot of things I struggle with.
I always think that you post the wrong number.
I always think when
because
I save it.
Because no one would know.
Well, I always think when I save it, it's the wrong number. And then
it
when Tim
is.
Puts it up, it's going to be like last week's episode. And then we're going to screw it up.
All of our fans are going to be confused.
Hey, we get some good downloads. We're doing well.
Well, I'm
averaging about 250.
Our Tim Elliott interview did really well.
Yes. Well, Tim's a very popular guy.
Well, he's got fans.
Yes. We're joined by another guy that has some fans. Mr. The James Krause. How are you doing?
Great, guys. What's up?
He's the man. I'm so excited that he's here.
Yes, I know. This is an interview I feel like you're the most excited about.
I don't know why. There we go. Got the mic.
Are we all good?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just like his attitude.
Yes.
He's wearing a tracksuit today. He's got on a...
I have sweats and a tank top on.
It's an Adidas tank top. Looks like he just ran for AAU Nationals or something.
This is why this is going to be my favorite episode we've done so far, is because...
We're off to a rough start.
With everyone at Grindhouse, this relationship right here is the one I like to see the most, because it's so, like... It's so interesting.
So authentic.
Yes, it is. So last night was KCFA.
Yes,
great
it was.
Show.
Amazing. I thought it was... Truthfully, one of the more exciting cards that I've personally been to live.
Yeah. James, what did you think? You were coaching, so it's a little bit difficult for you.
Okay, you got it. Before he answers that, he's going to answer this from a coaching standpoint.
Yeah, it's
not from a fan standpoint.
It's super hard for me. I usually let the fans kind of speak for themselves, you know, after the fights are over, I like to scroll through my timeline on Facebook and stuff like that. And I usually take what people say, you know, I usually take that to heart. And, but I, you know, I'm cornering most of the guys. We had probably, 12 fights, you know, and I'm cornering
11 of the 12 were Grindhouse guys last night.
I cornered probably 9 of them, I think. And, you know, from a coach's standpoint, I'm super proud of some people, super disappointed in some others. You know, as an overall team, I think we could have done better. You know, and I think that kind of just sets the stage for, how I feel about the show. You know what I mean? Cause I'm emotionally vested in the people that fight on it, you know. As far as the crowd was, I love the crowd, sold out show again. It was, you know, I felt like the atmosphere and the vibes, it was the loudest I've ever heard.
100%.
Yeah. 100%.
When Jade and Andy both won, it was like deafening. Mm-hmm. You know, the crowd was insane and I thought that was really cool. I feel like as a team we could have done better, but I mean, I'm pretty happy with the show. I feel like we've had better shows, better fights. You know, I don't know, but like I said, it just the way my guys perform kind of sets the tone and how I feel about the show. So from a coach's standpoint, you know,
here's how I described it to Krause after the, and I'm already getting out of the way early, but if the casual fan was watching the fights last night.
Casual fan.
There was no better fights to please and entertain the casual fan.
Right.
The first, I think the first four fights, almost the first four, Robbie got finished late in the third.
Right.
But they were decisions and they were legitimate 9 minutes of throwing hands. Mm-hmm. You know, from the first fight on, the crowd was into it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, very into it and, you know, I think that one of the kids in the first fight got a takedown and it was like, I almost had to turn around like, oh wow, like there's a lot of people here.
Right.
And like,
yeah.
I didn't realize how many people were there until they started yelling for that kid. And it was just, I thought the fights were great. And I think people, if it was their first time coming to the show last night, will most definitely come back because of the excitement. Like you said, the energy, It had a different vibe. It was good.
Well, with my thing with KCFA, and I think I've said this before, KCFA, you guys are doing something that's really rare in Kansas City, where I think more people are going now to see fights rather than going to see their fighter.
Yeah, right.
You know, like
going for the whole card.
Going for the
fight.
Whole card rather than, okay, I'm here to see Dallas Brown.
And as soon as Dallas
Jade,
fights, right, I'm leaving.
Yeah, as soon as Jade fights, I'm out of here. Now it's like people are going. I know people that are casual fans that didn't know anyone that showed up just because they're like, yeah, they're good fights.
And that's what we're trying to do, man. Yeah. And I want to give full credit to my partner, Joe Wooster, man. He does not get enough credit for the matches he sets up. You know, there's people on there that you guys look at like, oh man, that guy sucks. These fights are good though. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter if the guys aren't as skilled as some of the other people on the card, you know, like you said, the first four fights, those are usually your less skilled guys, but all those guys, and it's always like this, you know, you consider and say, oh, it's just coincidence. These two guys, you know, had a good fight, but we're talking about four, five, six shows straight that these guys that are less skilled are just going in there and having wars, you know? Right. So
that's how it usually works out.
Yeah. Joe does an absolute incredible job of matchmaking, you know, good fights and, entertaining fights. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that. And from a show standpoint, he puts it all in there. He puts on good fights. He puts on the fights that the fans want to see. Mm-hmm. He puts on the fights that need to happen as far as ranking goes in Kansas mm-hmm. City. And he puts on fights from a business standpoint that make money.
You right.
Know, he's doing the whole thing. There's a lot of guys in Kansas City that put on fights that fans want to see, but the show bombs because, you know, nobody sells tickets. But that's what we're trying to do, man. The whole thing that you said, that people come to our show to watch the show, not the fighter. Mm-hmm. That's really right. Was our goal to kind of set that in Kansas City because it doesn't really exist here right now. And in other places, you know, like go to Vegas, people just go to shows there.
Right.
You know,
that's what
we're trying to do. And I really feel that we're getting closer to there. We're not where we want to be yet, but I feel like Joe is the man. I feel like he's the guy that can do that.
Yeah. And that venue is really cool too, because it's similar to Memorial Hall, where it's like
a smaller Memorial Hall
where you can go sit anywhere or even stand behind the seats, and it's a great seat.
No
or
bad
great,
seats.
You know, place
and we've been
look,
asked
like,
to move multiple times, and we just don't want to because we love that atmosphere. You know, if we go to a bigger venue, let's say that holds 3,000 instead of, you know, 1,200 to 1,500, we feel like we'll compromise the atmosphere and the vibe, and
100%.
And we really don't want to do that. You know, it's we want to pack that place every single time and get that feel. You know, because it's, you know, your hair kind of stands up whenever the fights are going on.
And it's loud.
It's
super
loud.
I think it's a great, great place.
That vibe and energy to me and Joe is worth. You know, we will trade that vibe and energy. We'll keep that over a few more bucks any day of the week, man. It's super awesome to feel that and to hear that, you know, that crowd whenever they're into a fight. And, that's important to us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, we've been to all 10. I think all three of us have. And it just continues to look more like, even I like the new setup too. Mm-hmm. It continues to look more.
It's
and
progressing.
More, yeah. It's progressing every show to where it's like, man, this is getting somewhere.
And I think that's one of the problems that other local shows have, is there's no progression as far as quality of show goes.
Right.
Almost mm-hmm. almost a contentness with, you know, this number of people or, you know, these quality of fights.
Right.
Versus, you know, let's try to make this next show better than the last one. What are ways that we can make this show better than the last one? And I think that's what KCFA kind of, where they separate themselves from, you know, local or regional promotions, at least in Kansas City that I've been to.
Yeah, and I like I said, I really like that new setup. What made you guys decide to do that?
Well, they thought they had a guy who could coordinate the backstage. They thought they had the right guy to kind of make the switch to a more dynamic setup. Is that right, or did I make that up?
We've actually been working on that for probably, I want to say, 3 shows now, but the way it was set up before, if we would have done it before, we would have lost seats, and we already had an issue with sellout. You know, we were sold out before the show started last night, so we didn't want to take any seats away. So we actually figured out a way to add seats to this new setup. We added two more seats to each VIP table. And, so I think we added like 40 to 60 new, seats in the VIP section while still pulling off the new ramp. And I like the new setup, and there's definitely things we're going to change to make it better. I don't like that backstage is lit. I think it needs to be dim with mm-hmm. the rest. I think it'll bring in a new vibe and maybe some lights on the ramp and stuff like that. But we're always trying to progress and make things better. And I think, you know, I think we make it a little bit better. We chip away at it every show, and it's only going to get better, I think.
Oh, definitely.
I agree.
Well, let's transition.
Yeah, you got something coming up soon.
Yeah, James Krause, you have something come up. Tell us about
actually before we get into that.
All right,
I have another thought.
Fair enough. Go ahead.
Before you have a fight scheduled coming up. Well, you're about a month and a little change out.
Mm-hmm.
Almost a month, I guess. Today's the 20th. But next, you'll be traveling. What, on Tuesday?
Yeah, we leave Tuesday.
So Tim Elliott, who we had on the show, has a fight on Saturday versus Joseph Benavidez.
Mm-hmm.
And the main event on the Fox Sports 1?
Mm-hmm. The people's main event.
Right? Isn't that going to be the
It's the last prelim fight before the main card. We asked Tim if he thought his fight was going to be the people's main event, and he goes, nah, I think the real main event's going to be the main event. Which
like
is just so Tim Elliott. But you're going out there to corner him and have been a big part of his camp as usual. How do you feel going into that fight as a coach and a training partner?
Yeah, man, we really really love the matchup. Tim does very well against guys that go forward and meet him in the middle. Yeah, and Benavidez does as well, but you know, we just like the matchup and we think we have a very good game plan going into it. We've worked specifically on a couple things that Demetrius exposed him on, and you know, I think Tim has the tools to beat anyone. I really do. I feel like he can beat anyone at 125 in the world, and I firmly, truly, honestly believe that. He has the tools to do it all. You know, if he comes out and does round one like he does round three usually, I just, you know, he's such a tough guy to beat. I just can't imagine a scenario where this isn't just an absolute war, you know, a crazy, mm-hmm. awesome fight. Neither one of these guys are ever in boring fights. I don't think I've ever seen either one of them in boring fights. They both go forward and they both, you know, super fast, meet in the middle. They're both tough as nails. You know, I think they have very similar traits, and I really like the matchup for Tim. I think we have an awesome game plan going into it. And, you know, I just think Tim has the tools to beat Benavidez. I really do.
I agree. Yeah. I'm really excited for the fight. I think that I think you said it, or I heard someone say it. Tim tends to fight the better guy that Tim fights, the better he fight. He almost
absolutely
elevates his game,
fights up to the competition.
You know, based on who he's fighting. And, you know, he's fighting the number two guy in the world at 125. And I think he is going to come out and really, really, it's not that people don't think that he belongs, but I think he needs, you know, he needs that big name win,
right,
you know, to get mm-hmm. people to go, you know, oh, okay. You know, he's really good, you know, cause I think people, although he hasn't fought a guy out of the top 10 yet, you know, he needs that household, the win over that household name.
Right.
To kind of keep him in the mix and let people, you know that he's a legitimate contender for the belt. And I think after Saturday, people will understand what we've been talking about for weeks and weeks and weeks about how good he is and how good he can be. I think he's only getting better.
Absolutely.
You know, the sky is the limit.
Day. Yeah, he gets better every single day. You know, his wrestling is nuts. It's a different kind of wrestling. It's not your normal folk style. He's so good at throwing people. I mean, I watch him throw 205ers all the time. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? If they lock up, I've seen him do it all the time. He throws me, no problem. His wrestling is just nuts. He never gets tired. You know, he just doesn't get tired and he stays super strong through the whole thing. He's just got a set of attributes that you cannot recreate.
He's one of the best third round. I don't know if this is a thing. He's one of the best third round fighters I've ever seen.
He's
incredible.
He goes harder as the fight goes on. And it's usually because I'm yelling at him, but.
Right.
Yeah, you know, but that's the plan. We got to get rid of that, you know, because he ends his fights and he's still, you know, he could go out and do three more, and we have to get rid of that. You know, round one has to look like round three would. And if we do that, that's, you know, that's the plan here, is to come out hard in round one. Tim doesn't get tired. You know, I think he tries to pace himself or something like that. I don't know, but he doesn't get tired. It's, you can't make that. There's nothing you can do to him in 15 minutes to make him tired.
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
100%.
I throw that challenge out to anybody. You can't do anything in 15 minutes to make him want to quit. Yeah, you know, it's not possible. You know, so if we go out round one and we look like round three, man, he's a tough guy to beat.
Well, the thing that I like about Tim Elliott really is because when we talked to him and we kind of asked him, we're like, so how do you see this fight? And he goes, well, I'm traditionally a slow starter, so I'm trying to fix that. That attribute right there is where he gets it, where you obviously as the coach or, you know, the corner guy, you know, hey, this is something you need to work on. He's like, yeah, it is. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? He's not stubborn.
He knows it.
What are you talking about? I'm a top 10 guy. I'm doing well.
Right.
You know,
yeah, it's one. It's over the top with him. He'll say stuff that, like, hey, you need to fix this. Like, what? I need to work on my wrestling. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you're throwing dudes left and right, man.
Right.
You know, but he, super humble dude, and he is, I mean, he's like a very primitive person, but he is not afraid. He's super humble, has no problem to tap into one and two fight amateurs in the gym.
Does it all the time.
He does it literally every day. He'll put himself in the worst possible spots just to see if he can get out of them. And that's why he gets better. You know, he's doing things and he knows he's not afraid to say, hey, I suck here. I'm weak here and I need to work on it. You know, and that's, he's brought that to my camp. He's really been a huge part of my recent success, you know, over the past 2 years. You know, he kind of exposed me. I had this little guy coming in, taking me down at will. And I'm just like, man, what do I do? You know, and he said, no, well, work on your wrestling. I said, well, you're right.
And you don't listen to the podcast, so you wouldn't know. But we've actually talked about that on a couple occasions about how I don't want to say the dynamic of the gym, but kind of what Tim and even John, you know, brought to the gym.
They bring a different mentality.
It exactly what I've been saying. Like we've talked about this before, but it's a mindset.
Yeah.
It's a different mindset that they brought to the gym. And when John Elliott says, or Tim Elliott says, I think James Krause can beat anyone 155 pounder in the world. They're not just saying it because James is their friend.
Right.
They mean it.
Yeah.
I mean, they 100% wholeheartedly will go out on a shield and stand by that comment because they believe it.
When I took that Stout fight, you know, it was on 2 weeks notice Tim and John both the first day I got the call right after practice and we were going to lunch. And they're like, Tim said something absurd, like, I think you're going to smash him everywhere. I think you're going to out-kickbox him. And I'm like, what?
A world-class striker.
Yeah, who's the last guy that out-kickboxed him?
Right.
And then, like, man, they punched that in my head every single day. And they believed it. And I can tell they believed it.
Oh, 100%.
You said, you know, you had it right. They will die for those comments.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, man, well, maybe I can. You know, I can.
Well, these guys think I can. I should be able to.
Yeah, I mean, they have a different mindset. And it's you know, if you die, you die. You go out on your shield and, never a step backwards. And man, Tim especially has just, he's embedded that in my mind, you know, and Chael says it, you know, if you lie to yourself so much, you start believing.
Yeah. It becomes a truth.
Yeah. And it's boosted my confidence and it's done. I really, they're a big part of my success and just my mental shift and what I believe I can do now that they're a huge part of that.
And I think I've talked about this before, but you know, that comes from, you know, Tim's wrestling background, which is, you know, I mean, he, not only does he think that he can beat anyone in the world, I mean, he feels that way, you know, with a lot of guys in the gym and he's almost so invested in how almost more invested in everyone else in the gym getting better and less worried about himself. And it just, it's almost like you said, it's like he'll say stuff to me sometimes and I don't even like train seriously, you know, and he'll say stuff to me and I'll be like, what are you? you're kind of dumb, man. You know, like, if you really
it's
think
almost
that.
Delusional.
Yeah, like, you're kind of dumb. Right. You know, but then he'll say it a couple times and I'm just like, he almost gives me like this false confidence where I'm like, oh shit, like, he's right. You know, it's just weird. It's just weird. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, it's a good sense of delusional.
It
to
is.
Have, you know what I mean?
But am I lying? They're right 90% of the time.
Man, some of the stuff they said is, you know, they're pretty spot on.
Spot on all the time.
A lot of the time.
It's insane. It really is.
Well, let's transition now to James. You were talking about your training camp. You're fighting Jamie Varner.
Yep.
And tell us, first off, are you familiar with Jamie? Like, I remember when he was here at the Titan show when he fought Dakota Cochran, and you guys already seemed kind of friendly from my point of view.
Yeah,
so
we're pretty cool. Like, you know, we've talked, you know, I see him. Hey, what's up, man? Hey, how you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, you know, I don't want to say we're boys or anything, but you know, we're cool. Yeah.
Right.
I don't have any, you know, we say hi.
Does he have, Does he have Missouri? How does Bobby Cooper and those guys know?
Yeah, so he, I don't know how, maybe through wrestling or something like that. He's friends with, Jose Vega.
Okay.
And, you know, all those guys that train with Jose. So they, he's actually came down and trained with them before, and Jose went and trained with him for a couple.
Okay. Camps. In Arizona or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of how that hookup got started. And then, you know, he came to Titan and fought Dakota Cochran and, you know, so we've kind of said, you know, hey to each other in passing a few times. And
so this isn't like a bad blood matchup where it's like, I legitimately want to hurt this guy or anything like that.
Nah, I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but.
Right.
you're going to want to hurt him.
Well, you're going to hurt him, but
not maliciously.
Yeah. No, it's, to me, it's never like that. You know, I try to keep all the emotion out of it and stuff like that. But, I don't have a problem with the dude at all. And I don't think he has a problem with me. You know, we're just two competitors going after it, you know, and, I think it's a great fight for the fans. I think they put us number one on the pay-per-view for a reason. You know, I think they want to kickstart that off. And I'm excited for it, man. I'm really excited for the matchup. I think we both bring some awesome things to the table that are going to be good for the fans, good for the promotion. And, you know, I'm really, really excited for the matchup. I think he's going to raise my game to a new level. And I think it's probably my toughest matchup to date.
You know what I'm most excited about for the fight?
What's that?
Is because you're the first fight of the pay-per-view. You're going to be in there when Bruce Buffer does the "We Are Live." I just like that. I don't know. I really like that a lot. I can't wait. I feel like people, and it's a couple people that I follow on Twitter, get real into guys who were in the WEC. Who didn't fight, who are now in the UFC
and are fighting
in the UFC, you know, like they could have fought in the WEC, but now they're fighting in the UFC. So there's kind of that element to it where, you know, there was a small group of 55ers that I can really remember from the WEC days. Mm-hmm. You know, the Cerrone, the Varners, the Hendersons, the, you know, those guys. And you know, you were very much a part of that group when kind of the WEC was growing, I guess, or was becoming more popular is kind of when you had your WEC stint. So I think it's cool that you know, fast forward for four, five years, however long it's been, and you know, you're fighting a fellow WEC veteran in the UFC.
How did the fight take place? Did you get a call, or how did it actually come about you fighting Jamie Varner? Was that like, here's three guys, you pick one of them, or how did that?
No, they just asked me if I wanted to fight him. I said, absolutely. I love that matchup. I love, you know, I love the name. I don't like fighting these Ultimate Fighter guys. You know, I think the UFC thinks highly of me. Either that or they hate me, one of the two, because, you know, they're not giving me any easy matchups. And I like that. You know, that's, that elevates me to a new level. I think that brings the best out of me. You know, with the stout fight, I was nervous at first, and then, I really love the matchup. You know, same here. And, I've been working hard on my wrestling for quite a while now. And, I'm really excited to see, you know, if that takes place in the fight at all. You know, I know Jamie likes to strike a lot. And if he wants to kickbox the whole time, oh man, I'm all in on that. I think it'd be great for the fans. You know, I think we both bring some awesome stuff in the striking department. But I'm excited to see if he shoots, you know, what happens. You know, I think I have some tools that will counter his wrestling, and I'm pretty excited just to see how far along I've came as a complete fighter. And I think it's my toughest test to date as far as stylistically and matchup goes, and I'm really excited to see how, you know, my mind and my body rise to the occasion. You know, I'm not in this to get, you know, easy wins and rack up paychecks. Man, I want to compete, and I want to compete against good guys.
Man, I think your philosophy is way different than mine. I would just be like, give me the easiest guys, give me the most checks.
I mean, yeah. easy guy to check ratio would be great. No, I think that both of you guys are extremely well rounded in the entire game. And I think it has the makings to be a very, very exciting fight. And I think that's why it's numero uno on the old pay-per-view card.
Definitely. Let's transition a little bit.
Stop saying let's transition.
That's it's a good
just
way
too,
to...
Just too interview.
Okay.
I hate it.
Okay. So
let's transition.
Let's talk about something else.
There you go.
So, James, you're one of the guys, when we had Ripley on, we kind of talked about how he was one of those, like, first wave of MMA fighters where it was like him, LC, you know, Rob Kimmins, Bobby Volker. I kind of put you in that second wave where it was like you, Eric Marriott. Mm-hmm. So, when you came along, first off, what got you into MMA? And then second, like, what was the atmosphere back then?
Good question, Tom.
Thanks.
It was a lot different. So I kind of just fell into it by accident, man. I just kind of showed up one day, and never really left. I just fell in love with the sport. And,
so were you at the, cause I remember talking to Anthony, what gym were you walking into?
Yeah,
what?
I walked into a House of Pain in Grand Valley.
Okay.
Yep.
And so who were there? Who was there?
Oh man, a lot of the old guy, man, it was different back then. So like everybody trained with everybody, you know, mm-hmm. It wasn't like this is your home gym.
There wasn't enough people to have.
Yeah.
Split up into.
Yeah. Well, man, you'd be surprised. It was so different. Like MMA here is more of a business now. Back then, like nobody paid for anything. You know what I mean? Like nobody paid memberships. Man. So like I can specifically remember like one of the coolest practices. We had like all the best guys in the city and we just did two lines and we did like King of the Mat where you grapple in submission. There was probably 40 guys in there back then. You know, this is 8 years ago. You know, we had Kimmins came in every once in a while. He was an AJJ guy, but he came through every once in a while on the weekend. Same thing with John Cornette. You know, he was an AJJ guy as well, but he'd come through, like Cody Parrish, you know, mm-hmm. when he was same thing with him. We had Marriott. Marriott was, in my opinion, he just, you know, he got, very fortunate. He, was under, Eduardo Paceya, the guy, what are the odds of a Brazilian world champion jiu-jitsu player being in Grand Valley, Missouri?
Right, yeah.
And I think I credit Eric's success to, you know, he just went in and submitted everybody because he was strong. And back then he was workhorse, man. You couldn't get that. You had to kick that dude out of the gym. And he just, he learned jiu-jitsu before everybody else did. You know, back then it was one discipline against the other. You know, it was either you're a wrestler versus a striker versus jiu-jitsu guy, you know, and really when I say jiu-jitsu guy, I mean, not jiu-jitsu guy.
Wrestler,
I mean,
with some submissions.
With one or two. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's just evolved so much. I mean, when I say so much, I can't even explain the difference. Like guys now that have been training for 6 months would beat guys back then training for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's evolved so much. And, you know, even athletically, you know, there's more athletes in it now. And it's came so far. That's why it makes me feel old. You know, it's came so far just in my time period, you know, so, it's pretty cool to see the sport grow, and especially in Kansas City because, you know, you go to the coast and stuff, it's different. Like you go to Florida, California, Vegas, all that stuff. It's different, man. There's so many people there, so much talent there. We're just kind of behind the game and we're really starting to catch up. We're starting to produce some really good fighters. The Midwest has always been known for producing tough guys, but we're starting to get some really good technical fighters that win and high level.
Yeah. Didn't you tell me that, Eric Marriott taught you jiu-jitsu when you first started?
Yeah, he's probably been my only jiu-jitsu coach
ever.
I mean, really, I don't have, you know, I'm under Leo Pacina and Nova Uniao jiu-jitsu now. I would consider him my jiu-jitsu coach because I'm belted under him. But, as far as on a day-to-day basis, Eric has been there longer than anybody. You know, he taught me my first year and a half, 2 years of jiu-jitsu.
So were you a fan first and then said, hey, I want to do this?
No.
Or was it just, hey, well, this seems cool? You know,
I
mean, what I mean?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. You know, when I was a kid, I would rent, you know, the UFC ones and twos and I loved watching it. And then, it just kind of fell off or whatever. And, I enjoyed watching the sport and I enjoyed watching boxing and fight. I'm a fight fan. I'm not an MMA fan. I'm a fight fan. But sometimes I prefer watching like Glory over MMA.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm a fight fan. I watched boxing last night. I watch boxing on a regular basis. I love combat sports in general. But you know, I don't think I was a fan. I wouldn't call myself a fan. I loved watching it, but I wasn't very consistent as far as in viewing fights. When I had the chance, I would love to watch them, but my friend, I went to high school with, he wrestled in, he was actually pretty good at the time. You know, he was considered one of the better guys because he was a wrestler. You know, mm-hmm. back then wrestlers ran stuff around here. And, he just asked me to come in and, hey, try it out, blah, blah, blah. You know, I said, okay, cool. And I came in and still to this day, I don't think he knows that he got me started in MMA because the day I showed up, he wasn't there and never came back. So, yeah, I mean, it's came a long way. And, I wouldn't consider myself a fan. I showed up one day and then, I went to fights after that. Like I went to one fight like that weekend and then I fought like 2 weeks later after I started. It was crazy, man. It's, you know, I fought a dude with 8 fights already and I was nervous as hell. It was nuts. You know, hey, you know, you look like you can do a triangle decent. Let's put you in there.
You look kind of athletic. Well, how did fight
that,
next weekend.
How did that fight happen? Because I remember when we talked to Ripley, yeah. Ripley just said, hey, can I train? And they're like, yeah, do you want to fight in 2 weeks as well? And he's like, well,
he told him that he was a college wrestler. And they said, oh, you're a college wrestler. That's cool. Do you want to fight in 2 weeks? And you're just like, yeah, sure, I guess.
Right. But he had never shown up to even train. Yeah, so like, how did your first, you kind of said it like casual, but like, how did that actually happen?
It was pretty similar. I showed up to the gym and I trained a couple times and, I picked up jiu-jitsu fairly well. I'm long and lanky and flexible. So it was a lot easier for me to pick up. And, it was a couple practices in. Yeah. I had it like set in my mind that I wanted to train for at least 6 months to a year before I fought, you know, and, I pretty much got, I don't want to say I got pushed into it because at the end of the day, I could have said no, but like, I got it rammed in my head, like, hey, you're gonna fight in 2 weeks. I'm like, nah, I'm good. No, you're gonna fight. I'm like, no, I don't want to. No, you'll be fine. Okay. You know, after about 40 times of saying that, going back and forth, I was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. This is never gonna end unless I say yes, so let's just do it.
So I did it and fought a guy and I was scared. So I was not nervous, I was scared. I fought a guy with 8 fights and he had just beat, quote unquote, I wish you guys could see me. A coach of mine back then, it was just guy with more fights helping out guy with less fights.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't call him a coach. He just fought more than me and was less nervous than I was when I fought. So, he had fought the month before and, he fought the guy I was going to fight. And, the guy that I was fighting split him open with one of the nastiest cuts still, you know, that I've ever seen. It was horrific. He put a big old X right over his, eyebrow. And, so I was like, oh my God, he's beating the guy that's coaching me here. Like, what the hell am I doing? You know, like, what do you guys got me into here? So anyway, I fought and it was supposed to be on a real super small show. So that I was like, all right, man, there's not any, my friends or family's going to be there. So it'll be okay. I won't tell anybody. I'll just do it. It ends up being at the World Car Audio Finals at Bartle Hall. thousands, it got moved to there. Thousands and thousands of people are watching and I'm like, you got it. Like, what am I doing here?
That's amazing.
And I'm just so nervous. And I went out and won by triangle in 3 minutes. But I did not want to throw a punch in the fight. I'm like, I don't want to throw. Just take me down. So I can do jiu-jitsu.
It's amazing.
That is awesome. So did you get hooked after that fight?
Absolutely not.
It was the most miserable thing ever.
Yeah, I got talked in like my first 15 fights.
Joe Silva's like, okay, man, you're fighting on the 24th. He's like, nah, I'm good. You're fighting on the 24th.
Okay.
Still gotta
convince
him.
That's the way to get Krause into a fight. Yeah. Just keep on asking.
Just call him 3 times and tell him.
I fought 2 weeks after that. Yeah. They plug away. But I was like, I was training, you know, I never left the gym after that though. I got super addicted to the gym. I loved it. Joined, you know, boom. I was there every night and I just never left. And, man, I got so nervous for fights. I fought a lot though. A lot of my fights were, I would say over 50% of my amateur fights were just me showing up with a bag and saying, hey, I'll fill in from 155 to 185. What do you got? You know, and, actually I didn't say that. The guy that pushed me into it said it for me. I always wanted to grapple. I like to grapple. So, hey, I'll grapple. And then they're like, oh, no, you're going to fight. What? No, yeah. I don't want to grapple. So I got pushed into that and, yeah, it worked out for the better though, because, I feel like I performed better on short notice and, you know, it worked out good. So
you talked about it before, but, like I said, if you listen to the podcast, you know that we've already talked about this, but, I don't think that I know anyone who's more of a fight fan than Krause is, as far as, like you said, where you watched boxing last night, you watched Glory, just watching combat sports, this guy eats, sleeps, and breathes the combat sports to a T. And I guess my thing was, before I started hanging out with Krause like consistently, like I wasn't the casual fan, but I only was really invested in the people that I knew, I guess. Or,
right. If Nick Diaz is fighting, you're watching.
Yeah, him. Like I wasn't as worried about watching, you know, the Spike TV at the time, you know, prelims as I was, you know, the main card. And then you start hanging out with this guy and you're watching you have like a picture in picture. You got like his laptop and he's playing like some, you know, like Latin world championship boxing, like some people that, you know, like no one knows. They got 2 pro fights and we're watching them fight on the computer and they're watching the prelims on the TV. And it's just like, it's just a combat sports overload. You almost have to take a combat sports break afterwards because it's just too much. But this guy lives it.
Well, yeah.
And there was no point to that. I just wanted to say that. Okay. Like, I wasn't going to come full circle and make a point.
Who are some of your guys, since you are a combat sports fan, who are some of the guys, MMA, boxing, all of it included, who are some of the guys, one, that you kind of emulate, or two, that you just really enjoy watching?
Who are you a fan of?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a tough, tough question. When you talk about emulating people, I try to steal stuff from everyone. I try to steal, I try to pick these little things that work for good people. You know, like, I have a combination. I throw, Juan Manuel Marquez throws. It's just like a slick little uppercut. There's just little things that I try to break down that people do very well. And it's not one guy I try to emulate, you know, but I think I've learned so much. I can't stress that enough. You know, it's super, super underrated in my opinion. I have these guys that come into my gym and they have like no sense of they can't copy people. You know, like I watch the sport and I've learned so much from just copying people. You know, I'll watch them do it and then I do it and I'll record it or I'll look at it. I say, does that look like what he did? No. You know, am I throwing a leg kick like Tyron Spong? No. I need to turn my hip over a little more. I need to fix that. They have no sense of emulation. And, you know, but it might be because they don't watch the sport, but I've always been really good at that, copying people exactly how they do it. And I'll break it down for hours. I have no problem watching hours and hours of combat sports to break down whatever I am. To answer your question, let's go to
start with MMA. Who are you a fan of?
You know, I really love, there's so many different styles, but I'll just start plugging out some names here. I really love the Diaz brothers style. I like how they've brought like a traditional boxing look to MMA and they make it work extremely well. You know, it's not about power to those guys and they can hit hard. You know, it's obvious. It doesn't look like they hit hard, but they hit hard. They're knocking people out. The hardest hitter isn't always the guy that hits the hardest, if that makes sense.
Right,
you know what I mean? So I like the Diaz brothers. Man, I'm a big Anthony Pettis fan. I've done a few camps from him, helping him get ready for a couple fights. I helped him get ready for Lazon and Cerrone. That guy's super talented. I mean, awesome kicks, awesome, you know, hands. He's one of the best strikers I've ever, you know, sparred. He's very good. And to be honest, Tim Elliott, Zach Cummings, I love those guys' style. Not just because I train with them, but I just love their style. They have super good tricks. Zach has literally, and I'm not saying this, I've rolled with multiple world champion jiu-jitsu players. Zach has the best dart choke I've ever rolled with. Tim has a set of little tricks. He has a guillotine he does a little different. And some of his top game, not even moves, but just little positioning things that you don't really know until you feel it. You'll never see it, but you feel it and it's different. You know, I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of people. Anybody that does something different, I'm a huge fan of. I'm not about the, you know, 1-2-3 back leg kick. You know, I'm not a fan of the ABAB. We call it ABAB. You know, it's super traditional. I like changing the, you know, thinking outside of the box. That's why I'm a fan of the Rufus Sport guys, Duke and Pettis and Sergio and all those, Sergio Pettis, Anthony Pettis, all those guys from Rufus Sport. They're so good at creating that different look that not everybody sees. There's so many names in MMA. I could probably give you more better on other sports because there's not as many, but, like I said, anybody that's exciting, I like watching exciting fights guys that entertain for the fans because that's what we're here for, you know? But even the wrestlers, there's wrestlers that I like watching too. There's just so many good guys in MMA that I like watching right now. Cain Velasquez, I'm a huge fan of him. You know,
he's a champion.
Yeah, he brings a different look to the table. You know, a heavyweight that doesn't get tired, that's insane. You know what I mean?
Right.
Who else? There's just so many good guys.
You're a Shogun fan.
Shogun's my guy. He's my...
Although it's been tough to be a fan of late.
That's very true. I want him to hang him up, man. I want him to be done. He's...
True legend.
His pride days were... I mean, back when he was winning the Grand Prix at 23 years old. I mean, watch those. Golly, that guy was an absolute... animal.
Mm-hmm.
He is probably my favorite. You know, I'm a rider guy.
Oh my god, yeah.
So, Chael, I love Chael. I love what he, you know, bringing that different look to the sport. You know, he's the nicest guy you'll ever meet. If you've never met him, you probably think he's a huge asshole. literally one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your entire life. He does it to make money. He does it to, for the sport, you know?
So are you a fan of his trash talk then?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the Diaz brothers as well? You
absolutely.
Like that?
Okay. That's not,
Thomas hates the Diaz brothers.
That's not fake though. That's
right.
Real.
That's
very real.
That's very real. And the only thing that I don't like about the Diaz brothers is when they do things when obviously the other guy is not going to attack him. So for example, when, Nick Diaz fought Frank Shamrock and they go for the stare down and he's flipping him off, it's like, what the hell is the point of that? Now,
it's a different mindset, though, man.
But I'd love in the fight. Like, in the fight, if you want to talk your trash and awesome, because the other guy can hit you right now. So I'm 100% behind that. It's the, at the press conference and all that. It's like, come on.
Those guys, man, you have to, have you ever met either one of them?
No.
You have to meet them, and I haven't met either one. I met a lot of guys, but I haven't really, I've met them, but I haven't hung out with them. But from what I've seen, they're just super, I don't want to say awkward. They're super, like, socially, they don't.
Yeah. Socially, you
know,
awkward.
Socially, right. They're socially awkward. They don't really know how to react. And you got to understand, like, not everybody that fights is, you know, here for the crowd. Like, these guys, they don't like fighting. They hate it.
Right.
They fight because it's the, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to go work at McDonald's? No, they're right. going to smash people over making, well, I mean, seriously, what would either one of those guys
As
do?
As Mayhem Miller once said, I fight because I never learned how to read.
Let's give me an occupation either one of those, the Diaz brothers would do if they weren't fighting. They don't have much else.
Right. The only thing I could think of is construction is because they could,
I was going to say inmate.
Is
that an occupation?
Right. I mean, they fight people and they're super socially awkward and they just don't know how to, they don't know how to talk to people and they're probably, you know, scared, nervous, you know, they're gangsters. Don't get me wrong. You know, when they fight, they're down to fight anybody, but they don't know how to react to, to certain comments and stuff. So that's what they do, man. They've lived that their whole life. They had a rough upbringing, they lived in a rough neighborhood, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, and they're not the only ones that do it.
Oh yeah, no, they're not the only ones. I think they're just branded.
They're just
as
the only ones that Thomas hates.
Ones. Yeah. Right. No, I don't hate them.
What?
I,
like, yes,
I
said, you do.
If anytime they fight, I will watch the fight, but I will not watch the press conference. I won't listen to the media calls. Anytime there's a headline on any of the websites, I don't click on it to read it because I just feel like
hate them.
No, I just love their fights. That's all. I just want them to fight. Chael, I like the one-liners because he's stealing from pro wrestlers and obviously my pro wrestling background.
Chael's a marketing genius.
Right, yeah.
Marketing genius.
He's doing it, and I think everyone understands, except for Vanderlei, understands it.
Vanderlei doesn't get it.
None of the Brazilians.
None of the Brazilians.
It gets lost in translation.
Right,
they don't get it.
Oh my God, yeah. But
like Glory though, I'm a big, gosh dang, so many. Tyron Spong, I love him, and I don't want to sound super mainstream, but God dang, that guy is just so good. Giorgio Petrusian, he's amazing. The dude is one of the, probably the best southpaw striker on the planet. He's awesome. Saki, who's Spong just fought. I'm a big fan of his. I like to sport. I like Glory. I hate to say this, but I think I like watching Glory better than I do MMA. And it might just be because I watched MMA for so long, but
right.
Man, those guys.
The thing that I love about Glory is those guys could rope off like a 5x5 little ring, and those guys, they're just in the pocket. I mean, they're in the pocket.
There's not
the
like
entire
a lot
time.
Of like punch and like they move and reset.
You don't see many jabs.
Yeah.
No.
Those guys are throwing to do massive damage.
They got that. They got that Matt Waters mentality.
Right. Well, and you always post, Kraus, cause I followed you for a while on Facebook and all of the Twitter and all that stuff. But, you always post that one fight. It's like your favorite fight of all time. And that's a kickboxing fight too,
yeah,
right?
It's, in my opinion, it's the best fight, in all combat sports. Gosh dang, you're going to put me on the spot here. It is,
Raymond Dekkers.
No.
I like how you said that.
How am I not remembering this?
I just remember you always post
Chahid versus Mike Zambidis.
You're right. I feel like you post it like once a year and I always end up watching. That's the one time I'll watch is when you post
so,
it.
So like whenever we go on fights and stuff like that, you know, if we're on a road trip and I'm sure Turner's been here 1,000 times, I always ask the same questions to different people, like best fight of all time, best comeback of all time, you know, like stupid stuff like that, you know, and that, in my opinion, is the best fight in all combat sports history. Mike Zambidis versus Chahid, if you haven't seen it.
Dan Anderson, Shogunua won.
It's very good, but I can't,
Boy.
It's close, but I think the overtime round put it, you know what I mean? Put it in the number one spot. But if you haven't seen that fight, as soon as this is over,
we'll tweet a link out.
Yeah, we'll tweet it.
Yeah, you have to. It's
Split Decision. We'll tweet a link out.
Casey Split awesome. Decision.
Well, so answer those questions.
Yeah,
you just answered
comeback.
The first one. Best comeback.
Best comeback. Diego Corrales. I can't remember the. He fought a Hispanic guy in boxing.
No way. He fought a Hispanic guy.
Boxing. Shut up. Diego Corrales gets dropped three times in one round. It's like the 10th round. He's just getting handled. And you guys should tweet this one too. Getting just outboxed and his eyes are swollen shut. Gets dropped three times in one round. Comes back in like the 10th round. And he gets dropped in the same round and then knocks him out later in the round.
See, I like Gotti Ward too.
That's one of the best round.
Yeah, round nine.
Yeah, round nine.
Nasty.
Yep,
my nasty.
What's your best comeback, Turner? Because I don't think we've ever really gotten to this.
My best comeback.
Best comeback in combat sports.
Oh man, I really.
Todd Duffy, Mike Russo.
Dude, that's probably one of
I was there.
That's the first thing that popped into my mind because that was one of the most savage beatings that I've ever watched.
Oh. I was there at that fight. That was UFC 116, the first UFC I went to. And literally in the second round, because Todd Duffy was just jabbing him away and just really just kicking the shit out of him, people were getting bored. I remember distinctively right before that knockout, there was two guys sitting in front of me, and the Lakers were playing the Suns in the playoffs. And they started like, man, Steve Nash, I think it was Steve Nash, like Steve Nash and Kobe, man, and like, everyone kind of lost interest of the fight, and
right.
then that knockout happened, and everyone was like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah. It was insane. I'm going to mess this fight up. Was one of the seasons of The Ultimate Fighter, was it Nate Corey, Pete Sell, where he hits him with that body shot?
It's not
Scott
Nate Corey,
Smith.
Scott Smith. Yeah.
Scott Smith, yeah, okay, yeah. Scott Smith. Yeah. I don't know why I love that.
Learn
yeah.
your MMA history.
I know. That was bad. Well, yeah, Nate Corey, Scott Smith, what's the difference?
One of my favorite comebacks, and it was really after the
Scott Smith can be linked to almost all the comebacks.
Yeah.
Scott Smith,
Kung Lee. Yeah, that, yeah. But the fight I always think of is, Jake Shields, Dan Henderson. Cause that first round, Dan Henderson beat the shit out of Jake Shields.
First and second.
Yeah,
right?
First
and then
second.
For the next,
and then the next three, he just came back and beat him. That's one of the most.
Todd Duffy, Mike. I mean, that has to, I mean.
That's up there.
That was such a beating.
But the Pete Sell one too, because he was doubled over and like literally in pain.
Come on, Petey. And then, come on, Petey.
And then he knocks him out and they both fall on the ground. Yeah, that was great. What's some other questions that you always ask people? That we're gonna ask you.
Like, toughest guy in the sport.
In the sport or in UFC or what?
In the sport of MMA.
Oh man.
That's so hard because sometimes you look like you got your
Well, I'm not here to ask easy questions.
Okay, alright. Fair enough.
I don't know how to, I just know, well, here's the deal. Some guys that are tough.
Oh my god, here we go.
I'm gonna break it down and go to the UFC, like toughest guy in the UFC because.
That's fair.
If I go, I'm gonna pick guys from my own gym if I don't do that because it's cause,
well,
it's cause I know
sometimes they might, sometimes they cross over. Guys from your own gym might be the toughest guys.
Marriott's probably one of the toughest dudes.
Yeah.
Marriott or Joplin, the Armadillo.
What about Andrew Swafford?
Swafford is extremely tough as well. Golly, UFC, toughest guy in the UFC. Who's taking the biggest beating in the UFC? I'll tell you what, on The Ultimate Fighter, Tyler Minton got no credit. They didn't show that whole fight, man.
Right. Very tough guy.
He's, if you guys watch that, I hope they post the entire.
I think they will.
It's,
dude's a gangster.
It's rough. He went out like a warrior. Like if you want to go out, you know, 300 style on your shield, man, that's one of the worst. He won the first round, I thought. And second round's one of the worst beatings I've ever seen. And he was still, you know, if you want to call it throwing, I don't think he knew he was throwing, but he was going out on a shield, man. Warrior. Absolute warrior.
Yeah, that dude. That dude's pretty tough.
Who are you going to say, Turner?
I'm having a hard time thinking. I don't know why Diego Sanchez keeps popping into my mind.
I think that's kind of your go-to.
Diego's good. How about Chris Lytle?
I love
Chris Lytle.
Lytle, never been finished though.
Sad when Chris Lytle's last fight against Dan Hardy, when he got that finish, I don't think I've ever been more excited for like a person that I have never had contact with, nothing. I was like, that guy deserved, you know, he was like 30, he's like 34 and 12, you know, like, I mean, had a great career, but never really penetrated the top five or,
right.
And just for him to win like that, it was just like, okay, you know, like this guy can retire now.
I was going to say Junior Dos Santos after those two Cain Velasquez.
Oh, very tough.
I mean, that second fight in the fifth round where I thought he actually won that fifth round over Cain. I mean, his eyes, I don't even think he could see.
Speaking of Junior Dos Santos, Roy Nelson.
Yeah.
Very tough.
Right. Yeah. Roy's another.
Very tough.
Yeah. Another one that's, really tough. Who was I was trying to think of, you know, Chael's really tough too. I think Chael doesn't really get the credit. Sometimes, you know, he takes some beatings and stays in there when I think I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, but sometimes I think that, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I think he should stay in there longer.
Honestly,
but
at the UFC level though, I don't think there's anyone that's really not tough. You know what I mean?
Everyone, like, they're all tough.
You're all going to find tough guys. But yeah, the toughest of the tough, I think the Chris Lytles, the Chris Lytle fight with Robbie Lawler. When they were just going back and forth, and at one time they're both like clapping and like putting their hands in the air.
These are fucking tough, man. That's crazy. What else?
What's your favorite fight?
My favorite fight?
Yeah, he said his. What's yours?
Oh man. Favorite fight? I think the best fight, the best MMA fight of all time is Danhurst and Shogun 1. My favorite fight?
MMA? I would probably have to agree, MMA fight.
Honestly, this is gonna sound, I'm gonna change it. That was gonna be really gay.
Wow. So now we're gonna get your second favorite.
You're gonna get my second favorite. Okay, I'll go back to it. My favorite fight that I've ever watched personally, because that's how this works. If I didn't watch it, I wouldn't be able to say that it was my favorite. I wanted to clarify that for you guys, but. I don't even want to say this. I don't want to say it.
Say it.
I don't want to say it.
Come on.
When Krause fought Stout, that's my favorite fight ever.
Okay.
Oh. And here's why. And I'm not going to get emotional because I don't even really like the guy. But I'll simply say that it was a long time coming. And it was good. It was, not only was it good to watch him get the win in the UFC, the way that it happened, I don't think could have gone better from a movie storybook standpoint, you know, because here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand this. When I was sitting there in my basement watching it, I was going, he's about to get Bobby Volker. Like he's about to get jerked in Canada.
Right.
You know, like, he is about to get jerked in Canada. Like that's how it goes.
I looked at the scorecards after it. They actually had me winning.
Okay.
Really?
Good. I was like, I told my dad, I go, like, if this is, you're about to see him get jerked in Canada. This is just how, this is what happens in Canada. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. It just not only the fact that it was a guillotine, it was just so perfect. They're just like, oh, okay. Like,
2018, 1919, going in the third. So I would have won, and I won a third, I think, pretty decisively, even without the taking.
They gave you the first round.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, because I thought that was one of the worst. Going back to that Bobby Volker Patrick Cote fight. Even my mom, who is the definition of the casual fan, was like, "Oh, good. So Bobby won." And like, I think she went to go make some more food or something like that. And then she came back. She's like, he lost.
The most clear-cut 29-28 I've ever seen.
I've got one for you, Turner. Best fight you've ever seen live.
We did this on the show. You don't listen, but we did on the show. I always go back to.
He's going
to
steal mine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael Johnson, Junior Hernandez. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's that or I fight. This is one of the. This was probably the 10th MMA show I ever went to, and because I knew the guy, I thought it was real crazy, was Brian and Ben Nogueras. Brian Davidson, Ben Nogueras.
That was crazy.
That was nuts for me to watch. Yeah. Because
Ben
just
drops him in like the first 10 seconds.
Oh, like first strike, I think, thrown. Yeah. Dropped him.
That was crazy. Right.
But the Michael Johnson, Junior Hernandez fight was just...
Those guys were beating the hell out of each other.
What card was that?
Like, Titan 16, maybe?
Okay.
Shouldn't you know that?
No, Titan 16 was not that. No. Titan 16 was... That was my first event.
Was that Abe Wagner?
Yeah, that was Abe Wagner, Tim Sylvia, and...
Okay, well, Titan 17.
Yeah, no, Titan 17 was...
Titan 18, who cares?
I was going to say, my favorite fight... Actually, everyone always says Dan Henderson,
That's Shogun. The greatest fight ever.
That was really good, but honestly, I remember thinking back, I actually preferred, because it was the same night, it was Eddie Alvarez, Michael Chandler won. And I remember thinking, I like that fight a little bit more. And the beating, Dan Henderson and Shogun literally were beating the fuck out of each other. But maybe it was because of the fast pace and the skill. I remember thinking, I like the Eddie Alvarez.
Oh, that fight was amazing. Yeah. But I think you have to factor in like the legendary stat, like just two legends.
Right.
It was two true pioneers and mainstream ambassadors, guys that took the sport from, you know, being not so mainstream to kind of making it popular, and they're just in there. And like, honestly, even though it was quite a while ago, I mean, they were, that was kind of the downslope of both of their, you know, that was kind of when they were starting to slow down. You kind of started to see the mileage, you know, on their bodies and everything like that. And then to see them go in there and just for five rounds, I mean, just every round had 4.5 minutes of just, oh my God, oh my, oh shit, oh my God, oh my God, you know.
Right.
It was crazy.
And he's taking that, where I'm coming from though is the, okay, I don't know, and I did, but I'm saying, I don't know either of these guys.
Right.
Watching them fight.
Right.
That was just insane.
Oh, Michael Chandler, Eddie Alvarez, like I've said before on the show, if they fought every weekend, I would watch.
Oh, yeah.
I would never get bored or mad that Bellator made that fight. That first fight was legendary.
I'm honestly hoping that their third fight is very, like, controversial, like, split decision.
Right. So they have to do another one. Yeah. Very selfish of you, but I like it.
Yeah. I don't care for them, and then my favorite fight live is because you guys were talking about it, and I've said this again, but I'll say it just because maybe it was the reaction and it was a great comeback as well, but the Eric Apple, Bobby Volker fight.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Apple and Bobby Volker. I mean, Eric came in there and I was a huge fan. I was like a hardcore fan, but I had never seen the behind the
was
stage
that in
stuff.
St. Louis?
No, that was in Kansas City. That was the Strike.
Oh, the
show.
First. Okay, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. That was that show, and it was the first time that I was I got a media credential because I was with Fight Show Live,
right.
And it was the first time I got to see. Yeah, I got to see like the backstage workings of a show, and maybe that's why it stuck out to me. But Eric Apple came in with Josh Barnett and Bob Ballou, and as a hardcore fan, I'm like, oh my God.
Bobby Volker came in with Van.
Yeah, Bobby Volker came in with just, I mean, I didn't know who they were, just two guys, you know what I mean?
That was crazy, man.
He was getting, I mean, another comeback is, he was getting his ass kicked those two rounds, and then that third round.
On ice skates the whole round.
Yeah, it was a Bobby Volker fight.
Yeah, and then that crowd went insane. That was the closest to like a Chiefs beat the Raiders in overtime reaction that I've ever heard. And that's why I always say live, that one. And then as far as a good fight, I never saw the Michael Johnson, Junior Hernandez.
Absolute war.
But another Junior Hernandez fight that I saw was the Junior Hernandez, Kevin Kroom.
Oh God, that was crazy.
That one was crazy. I remember thinking that was
good
insane.
Money to see that again.
Yeah. Junior doesn't generally find himself in a lot of boring fights.
Yeah.
He's a pretty exciting guy.
And he has that style, kind of like the Glory style we were talking about, where he's like, I'm going to stay in the pocket. Yeah. I'm not really moving. I'm just going to hit you as many times as I can. So,
speaking of Michael Johnson, a fight that I watch online sometimes is when you went to Springfield and fought Michael Johnson down there. Was that your seventh pro fight?
Yeah.
Eighth pro fight, somewhere around there. And this dude gets booed something fierce.
I still to this day, if you ask me, the most brutal and terrible crowd I've ever been in front of, Springfield, Missouri.
Bro, they hated you. They hated
they
you
hated
something
you.
Crazy.
I got like death threats. I got called this horrific names on the way to the cage. And I was like, golly, like, you know, it's like, I'm used to like, you suck, blah, blah, blah. Like, it got bad. I was like, good Lord.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
What's wrong with you people?
Oh, man. I don't know why.
Well, in the fight, you showed this to me. It was when you fought that Ken Shamrock guy.
Matt Williamson.
Yeah,
Matt
yeah and my favorite thing is you head kicked him, and I think you head kicked him again. And then,
before he finished the second head kick, there's already guys climbing in the ring. Like, I'm like, whoa, what? Where?
That's my favorite part is I think his girlfriend like jumps. Like,
where was that guy setting at? Where he got there so quickly?
I kicked him first, and he stiffened up, and his back hit the ropes, and he like came right back to me. I was like, all right. I kicked him again, and like next thing I know, like before he lands,
there's people in the ring.
His corner is like in the corner or in the ring already. And his girlfriend's got her like.
Were those dudes mad? Like, were they?
I don't hope not.
I mean, were they? Like,
I think they were concerned for his safety.
They got in the ring so aggressively. I was like, oh, like they're like.
They're storming.
They're like pissed, right? You know, like someone stopped them. They're like sprinting into the like. I don't know. Before he fell down, there was a guy like climbing through the ropes.
Oh man, I just remember the guy's girlfriend, and it was like something from like a you know
like zooms in on her.
Oh, her face just like.
Like from a horror movie that, you know, the boyfriend
from a horror
dies.
Movie.
Yeah, a horror movie.
Jesus. I love this podcast. No, yeah. But there was a, before Krauss got into the UFC, we used to hang out a lot, like we go to lunch together and stuff. And he used to, work at Combat Sports. I used to work at this place. It was pretty close. We'd go to lunch and just hang out all the time. Then all of a sudden he fights Stamps out, beats Stamps out, gets a couple bonuses. And then, I got a text, him on like a Thursday. He texts me back on a Saturday. You know, what I call getting Hollywood.
Okay.
He got Hollywood. Is that true? Can you confirm or deny that?
That's completely false.
We used to hang out all the time. Like, we were just, you know, we hung out.
Maybe because he's
hold on a second. By hang out, he meant we used to go to lunch because we worked two blocks from each
other. Well, hanging out nonetheless. But,
now he's got this corporate job making more money than everybody else.
No. Now this guy's running a gym and
he's in a different tax bracket now.
You gotta leave a message at the gym and he'll call you back. I'm like, I've never left a message for anyone in my life. I gotta leave this guy a message for him to call me back. What the hell?
Well, how did you get into owning a gym? Because you said, you know, going back to your early days when you just showed up.
Well, he had all that extra time from not hanging out with me to do something.
Oh, okay, so is that how it came about? You're like, well, fuck Turner. I'm just going to own a gym.
Yeah. He had a pick, and he chose the gym.
Right.
Yeah, I chose the gym over Turner. No, I worked at Grindhouse for – I probably worked there for 3 years, you know, and
– What were you doing?
I was the general manager, just running the overall day-to-day operations of it. And, you know, we started out with probably close to, I would say 20, 30 members.
Mm-hmm.
So we started really small. And, you know, we've grown it to, you know, we're probably 240, 250 members right now.
Jesus.
I think we're at 238 when I left on, Friday. But yeah, it's going really good, man. We have some huge, awesome plans, very near future, for that. And I'm so excited. You know, we kind of talked about this on the way up here, but I get excited for business, you know, cause in MMA, like after you've been doing this for so long, I've been fighting, training every day. I would say minimum six days a week for 8 years solid. And like, I don't train like most people. I train a lot, you know, I train hard and, I put more time in than most people do. So it's been a solid 8 years for me. I don't take breaks. I don't take months off like people do. I've never taken more than a week off, I don't think. So, you know, I don't, the learning curve isn't as big there. You know, you don't learn a lot of new techniques after you've been doing something for 8 years, but in business, I learn something new every day. So I get super excited about it. And, it's really cool for me. You know, I found something new that like, you know, something besides MMA that my heart gets into and I really enjoy doing. And, you know, I love going to quote unquote work. I don't consider it work, but I love going there and learning new things and learning new tricks. And I'm so excited to see where the gym goes. And I feel very confident that it'll be a big deal.
So did you have aspirations? Like when you were 3 years into training, did you go like, man, I want to own a gym, or did that just happen?
You know, I think, you know, when I started working at Grindhouse probably 3 years ago, I had wanted to own a gym then. So I'm not really sure when that came about, if you want the truth about it. I love the sport, and, you know, there's some people that are employees and there's some people that are bosses, and I'm a boss mentality guy. I can't go in and clock out every day. I'm not a 9-to-5 type of guy. I'll blow my brains out if I have to do that. So I knew I wanted to do something where, you know, I can make my own hours and I'm responsible for how much money I make, and I can run the show basically. And I love MMA. I love everything about it. I'm passionate about it. So it kind of just, you know, 2 and 2 equals 4. And I just kind of put it together. I said, hey, you know, what better way, you know, than to own a gym? I think I have, you know, skills, and, if I surround myself with good, you know, good coaches and stuff like that, I think I have the skills and everything to teach up and coming fighters. And, along with the coaches we have, you know, I think we're doing a great job.
I think one of the big parts that he's leaving out is that I said this on the show before, but he's,
I don't watch it.
He doesn't listen to it. So he wouldn't know, but, he's one of two guys who I've ever been around, which is a very small sample size, but who can verbally coach and tell me to do something. And I'm not a visual learner, I guess. Like, I have to actually like be a hands on. Mm-hmm. Him and Derek Ripley both have the ability to say, to watch me do something and go, hey, try this instead, or you're leaving out this step, you know, and I don't know why. I don't know why. It's really weird. And And there's a million, you know, other coaches at Grindhouse that, you know, that do a great job. And then they can actually show me, you know, physically what I'm doing wrong. But for some reason, him and Ripley, like, have this, and I think it's just a knowledge of the game and the sport that they can look at what I'm doing and see, you know, the step that I'm missing or how I can improve what I'm doing. And the point is he's a fantastic coach. And although, you know, Grindhouse is full of, you know, great coaches on the staff who are there every day, helping everybody get better, he's probably the best coach. He's invested so much in everybody from the top level pros in the gym to the first day guys getting better, mm-hmm. that he's created an environment that people want to go to. People get excited to go because they know they're going to get the top level coaching right. and training every single day that they go in, and people who are actually concerned with them getting better versus this guy's a pro fighter's in the UFC. Like right. he only cares about his fight coming up. He doesn't care if I, you know, get better. And I think that's a huge difference between Grindhouse and any other gym that you go to. Right. Or at least the ones that I've been to.
Now, when did that transition, you know, with coaching or cornering, it's usually just like, hey, I'm training and the guys I train with the most are these guys right here. That's my corner. But you've kind of became the head coach. When did you feel comfortable coaching?
Man, well, back in the day, it was exactly what you said. You know, it was like, hey, I train with these guys more. So let's, you know, it even went as stupid as, hey, this is my friend. He'll be in my corner.
Right.
And, you know, I trained a lot. So I trained with more people than most others that were in, you know, inconsistent. So, you know, I started cornering people pretty early, you know, and, I think I have a good way, you know, if you do it, if you're experienced in cornering, you kind of, you know, your fighter and you know how to connect to him, you know how to speak to them. And I think I'm good at finding which guys you need to yell at. Which guys you need to talk to calm, because it's different. You know, if you yell at one guy that you could break them, you know what I mean? It's, you know, like Jade last night on KCFA, she's a person you need to yell at and you need to, you know, get in their ass a little bit and get her fired up. You know, Anthony, on the other hand, doesn't like to be yelled at. You know, he likes to be talked to calm and collective. No matter how rough it gets, you got to talk to him calm, get his head clear. So you got to know, you know, who you're talking to and what you're talking about. And I think I have a good, you know, cause I'm emotionally invested and I know all my fighters, you know, I think I have that down to, you know, to a pretty good science where I can talk to them how they need to be talked to. And it's pretty, you know, if you're doing everything right in the gym, you know, these guys know what to do anyway. You're just throwing suggestions out. Tim actually hurt my feelings when he didn't really hurt my feelings. it was after one of his fights that he won or something like that. He goes, man, he's told somebody this and they told me, he goes, man, Cross is a better coach than he is a fighter. I was like, what the fuck? Messed up, man.
I think that speaks volumes to your coaching.
I'm in there more than most people are, so I have the ability to see specifically what that person needs help with. And you know, I think it's just more time and experience with the people than others.
Well, and that was another question I had with these top level guys that you're working with, Zach Cummings, mm-hmm. Tim Elliott, and you had mentioned game plans. How do you game plan at that level? Obviously, you know, at the amateur level, it's, hey, you need to be working on striking because you're striking, you know, but when they're the world's best fighters, how do you game plan or get ready for a fight?
The only difference is
get them ready for a fight.
Absolutely.
Say.
The only difference is, you know, at the amateur level, you're coming up with more of a generalized game plan. Let's go and do what you're good at.
Right.
Let's, you know, if you're a good striker, let's try to strike. Let's keep it standing. At the top level, everybody's good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going after a generalized game plan of like, if you're a striker, you need to strike, I like to expose the weaknesses of others. You know, you have to find what they're weak at and, you know, and expose that. So you have to pick out, you have to really do your homework. You have to pick out specifics that, you know, and I don't want to indulge in Tim's game plan,
right.
But, you know, we've watched a lot of video and we've seen a couple spots that Benavidez has been beat multiple times at, you know, and it's not by beat. I don't mean lose fights at, I mean lose exchanges or lose positions or, you know what I mean? Like there's little tiny spots. It's like watching plays in the NFL, you know, you don't watch the game to see what games they lose. You watch the plays and the quarters, the little spots to see where they're losing at, and you try to recreate those plays again. It's the same concept. You know, you want to recreate the spots that person doesn't win most of the time. So I think we have that down, but the hard part is the execution, you know, because obviously they have a game plan as well. So, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's a fight, you know, and they have to, you have to go through a stick to the game plan. That's important because a lot of guys go out there deer in the headlights and they're just like, oh man, I just want to go out and throw punches. But you got to stick to the game plan. You got to be smart. It's a thinking man's game. You have to be, you know, pretty intelligent when you're doing game plans. And you have to also, you know, realize the fact that that guy's got a good game plan as well.
When did you start doing the game plan thing? Cause you kind of said how those first 15 fights of your amateur career, you kind of just got pushed into it. So I don't imagine you were like game planning. So when did you personally kind of make that switch?
I'll tell you when I finally got comfortable. I can remember the fight that I finally got comfortable in a fight. It was my second pro fight. You know, I've always kind of game planned and watched. I like watching film. I'm like Turner said, I'm a big combat sports fan. So, you know, if one of my friends is fighting somebody, I'm just going to watch film on the guy just to see who we're fighting. You know what I mean? Whether I'm part of the training camp or not. But, you know, I don't know. I just think I've always been, I just offer my suggestions. If somebody wants to take it, awesome. And, but you know, whenever I don't want to sound like I'm the head coach tournament, it seemed like I'm running things over there. You know, we have an awesome group where whenever I come to fight, you know, I have no problem taking a back seat to Tim and Zach and to Austin, my boxing coach. And those guys help me out too. So it's not like, you know, I'm the only one coaching. These guys
help
me out.
It's not a dictatorship.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We have an awesome thing going and I have no problem taking a back seat. Saying, look, matter of fact, I'll tell them this, like, I don't want to worry about this. You just need to tell me what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, I've seen people, not progress because they don't do that. They've been a coach so long in their life that they're uncomfortable being not a coach, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I put my trust and put my game plan in those guys' hands and they come up with good stuff usually. And, it's always the same, you know, if Zach's fighting me and Tim are usually saying something. If Tim's fighting me and Zach are usually saying something. And, you know, if I'm fighting, those guys are usually saying something. And there's always other people involved as well, but I'm just referring to the three guys we have in the UFC. But yeah, it's a collective effort through the whole team and all parties involved in the training camp.
Turner's just shaking his head no.
Oh no.
I think there's so many good, it's such a good group of guys and everybody has the things that they're good at. And it's from a coaching standpoint and seeing little things. I think you found a blueprint in the gym that makes everybody better. And there's no, like, I hear people say this and it's so stupid. Like, there's no egos at the gym. Like, that's true. Like, it's true. Like, it's true. I mean, for at least as far as the top level guys go. I mean, there truly isn't, you know, like if somebody, you know, who isn't in the UFC, you know, says something to one of the guys, you know, hey man, I saw you do, you know, no one's going to be like, you know, you don't tell me what to do. Like I'm in the, it's not like that at all. It's like everyone's such good friends that there's no, I don't know. It's weird. There's no, like ego and no one's afraid to tell, you know, somebody that they think they should try this or I don't know. It's just different. I can't really explain it.
I think the big difference is at our gym, I feel like our guys try to focus on others rather than themselves.
100%.
And that works in full circle. You know what I mean? So I'll just use, you know, me, Zach and Tim again as an example. Like, I'm not worried about myself. I let those two worry about me and it's vice versa. You know, the rest of the team worries about them. So it's, you know, at a lot of other gyms, bigger gyms, it's, you know, there may be a lot more talent there, but you walk into there and those guys always seem to be training for themselves, you know, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean? In this sport, you have to be selfish sometimes, but it's a little different atmosphere. I feel like we have at Grindhouse. It's, you know, I don't worry about myself. I let everybody else worry about me and I worry about the other guys in there getting ready.
So it's a checks and balances system, as they say in American government.
Well, going back to the business side, I like that comment, but going back to the business side, you're saying how you're learning all this stuff. Who's kind of, you know, obviously with fighters, you can watch a fighter, but with business, how do you learn? You were saying you're learning so much. How do you learn so much in that business aspect?
Absolutely. It's you know, I do a little bit of everything. Once again, I try to steal good stuff from everybody. So, the thing about MMA gyms is there's not very many people doing serious money in MMA gyms. There's a couple guys, you know, Laborio out at ATT is, I mean, he's the man. He's making serious money right now. And he has an absolute fantastic business. You know, he's not just making money hand over foot. You know, he has a great gym, great facility, great people. He has an awesome team surrounding him. Duke out at Milwaukee, another, you know, they have, I think Laborio at Coconut Creek, you know, they keep in mind they have 35 schools, ATT schools across Florida, but, at Coconut Creek, the main headquarters where all the pros go, I believe they have around 1,000 students, 250 kids or something like that. Duke, I believe, has like 400, 450 students. Jeez. You know, and that's in Milwaukee.
Right.
So
yeah.
You know what I mean? That's, he's doing great stuff, and they both have different things they're good at. Laborio focuses on the kids. They have like a daycare, in-house daycare there, after school program. Duke, he's good at marketing, focuses on marketing, social media, new classes, girls classes and stuff. They do a great job of marketing. But really, a lot of my successes came from traditional martial arts, you know, like Taekwondo schools. Those schools have no problem doing, I've seen some of them pull, I've seen schools do $70,000 in 1 month for, you know, which is, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
incredible.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah.
Incredible. You know, but I try to take a little bit from everyone. I you know, I try to focus on, you know, whatever we're building that month, you know, I may steal something from Laborio. I may steal something from Duke. I may steal something from a traditional martial arts school. I just, you know, I try to see what works and try to build on it.
So you would say like this kind of for you is like the, trying to find your identity with the gym, because you kind of identified the Laborio is the kid. Oh, well, that's where they're known for. Obviously, they have all the best fighters, you know, a lot of the best fighters in the world.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying for Grindhouse. Is that what you're trying to do right now? Is that that time period?
Yeah. We're definitely absolutely building our kids program. It's been our kids program's been open for, I would say, 4 to 6 months, and it's
exploded. Yeah, exploded.
It's gotten quite big. And, you know, we're going to move facilities within the next year. Our lease is up in 1 year, and we're going to move to more of a commercial spot, and, probably try to do some kind of in-house daycare and or after school program. And I really think that's, you know, we're looking at doing, you know, 3 to 5 locations in the next 3 to 5 years, and, you know, separate disciplines. So, you know, it might be an all Muay Thai school. Mm-hmm. You know, we've looked into doing CrossFit gyms. And stuff like that. So we're looking to do, you know, franchises and build on it. And, I'm extremely excited to see where it goes. I'm very confident that it'll be a very big deal in this area.
This guy's a businessman.
This guy is the busiest man. That's what I said. I mean, you know, there was at one time when I was working 3 jobs and I was in school and I was like, God, you don't have my schedule.
Yeah.
And then like, as I've got to know Krause and easily in like last 6 months, I'm like, I have done nothing compared to this guy. Like, literally, it feels like, here's another question. As far as your schedule, are you literally on a time? How do you schedule all of this stuff? Like, do you have, you know, Chanel, your wife helping you, or do you just do it yourself and just hope that it all falls together? Like, how does it happen?
I live off my calendar, man. I live off my iPhone, you know, especially when I'm getting ready for fights. I'll be honest. It's tough, man. It's,
right.
You know, like Sundays are usually my days are clear. Like, I don't like doing anything, but like, even today, I'm super, super, super tired because we were out last night.
He dreaded the podcast.
No, the podcast, I'm actually excited to be here, but you know, I just bought a hot tub, so I gotta go pick this thing up later today. And I'm like, man, I just want to pay somebody to go get this for me, but I can't. I gotta go do it myself. You know, but during the week, man, it gets rough training for a fight. You know, so you're putting in a camp, you know, it gets busy. And then outside of training camp, I try to fill it with stuff for the gym anyway. So, it gets tough, but you gotta live by a schedule, and I try not to let stuff get in my way. You know what I mean? Little things. And I'm not very good at this. I've gotten a ton better at it, but saying no to people, it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And having a clear schedule, you know, and making time for the important things that are going to be positive for my life and for my business.
Grindhouse just brought, a podcast veteran.
Yeah.
A KC Split Decision podcast veteran, onto the coaching staff. One Derek Ripley.
Yeah.
Which has been great,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
what kind of led to that? And how do you think, Rip, you know, helps the gym and what does he bring to the table? I guess what did you see in him as a coach?
So, we needed extra help. You know, we're getting to the point where stuff's not getting done because we're so busy. And, we have Andy at the front desk, and sometimes it just gets overwhelming for him. And I'm usually on the mat either teaching right now. I'm in a training camp. So, you know, I can't just go help him whenever. So we needed the help, and we've been talking to Derek for probably 6 months about bringing him on at some point. But I think he's going to do a really good job. I take that back. He is doing a great job of like filling the little holes in the gaps and, that we were missing before. You know, he can help. So he's pretty much an all over guy. You know, I'm kind of pushing a lot of classes. He teaches a lot and he coaches a lot. He's a great coach, as you said earlier. He's running our MMA program. He's coaching that. He does a great job. It's, you know, super tough, almost like a collegiate wrestling practice. It's, mm-hmm. you know,
yes.
really tough. It's been awesome for me. He's teaching kids classes. He teaches a bunch of different classes and we're about to add to the schedule and stuff like that. So he'll have that role and he helps behind the counter and stuff like that. So he really, basically what I'm trying to do with Derek is I'm trying to groom him to, I'm just trying to replicate myself. Trying to look for an intern. You know, like we talked about this last night at KCFA. I want to look for an intern to also groom. My plan is to send Derek in his own school at some point and, you know, do the same thing for the intern and send them to another school. And I just want to keep, you know, recreating myself because I see a lot of guys. I've seen this, throughout the industry that they don't recreate themselves. And it's basically the second you walk out of your gym, it goes to crap. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? You can't do that. You have to recreate good people. Good businessmen, good teachers, good instructors, really all overall good at everything. And, you have to recreate these guys so you can expand and, you know, be successful.
Is there some place where, aspiring interns can inquire about this position?
Or
maybe they can just come sign up at the gym and work from there.
I mean, I'm looking to bring somebody on like, you know, probably I would say, and it's kind of up to you, you know, it's up to the person that wants to do it. I want to bring somebody on 2 to 3 days a week, you know, to help out behind the counter and maybe on the mats, you know, depending on who it is and what they do. But like I said, I want to recreate somebody that can, either do one side or the other. You know, if it's a person that doesn't have much technical knowledge as far as jiu-jitsu and MMA and that's fine. I can make them a program director behind the desk that, you know, that those are always in need. And then if it's somebody that doesn't know much behind the desk, but it's a great teacher, I can teach them the desk part. You know, I'm looking for somebody that can, you know, eventually go help out at another location.
It is exciting time to be James Krause.
That's wonderful.
Like, I mean, seriously, with KCFA, the 10 shows we talked about,
he's the king.
He is right now.
I wasn't a part of all 10 shows. I'll just say that.
He's the king.
Yes.
When did I start? I think I started at KCFA 3 or 4.
I was going to say 3.
3 or 4.
Yeah. Were the first two just Joe Wooster?
He had other partners.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
I think I started at 3.
Sounds right. We were talking last week about how crazy it is that there's already been 10 KCFAs.
It doesn't
10
feel like there's been 10. Like, yeah. I can still remember that first show.
100%.
And, you know, showing up and the whole fun atmosphere of just the first time, you know, and
we're also looking, into expanding that as well. We're in the talks of, dabbling in the grappling tournament field as well.
Nice.
So.
That seems like it's something in the Kansas City, at least, that's starting to explode.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, it feels
absolutely
like there's so many people. I think Dave Jackson has one of his tournaments coming up. I think there's a couple other people that are going to be doing some of those grappling tournaments.
Cousin's coming here.
Right.
Cousin's Leo's coming here. Leo's been having the
Yeah, Leo's ones are fun.
Grindhouse had an in-house tournament.
Yeah, Grindhouse one. How long ago was that? A month ago, yeah. Yeah, I really like those grappling tournaments.
I do too.
They're fun to watch.
They're great.
So. All right. Well, with that, are we ready to?
I guess we'll let him go
to get out. I mean, we've taken up about an hour and 30 minutes of his time. So,
oh yeah, he's so busy.
He is a busy man.
Oh, he's so busy.
With that, we will get out. So, thank you guys for listening, James. Before we let you go, is there anything you want to plug? Any at the James Krause?
Tell him. Where's Grindhouse at? Tell him where it's located.
Yeah. Grindhouse is in 823 Northwest Commerce Drive. It's in Lee Summit, right off Shipman Road. We have kids classes, kickboxing classes, fitness classes, pretty much everything.
Anything you want.
MMA. Yeah, anything you want, we have it. You know, really any age group, just about any person, you know, that would ever want anything to do with fitness or self-defense or, you know, anti-bullying for kids or anything like that, we have a class for them.
All right.
Amen.
Well, thanks, guys, for listening. We'll be back next week with another great show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yep. That was great, man.
All right.
What's coming on?